Living with Maderly. Living with Maderly. Living with Maderly. Maderly. Living with Maderly.
Hello and welcome to episode 8 of our 12 Days of Maderly series. This is a podcast about nostalgic TV. And at the moment, we are doing Christmas specials and Christmas festivities. My name's Andrew, and I'm joined, as ever, by the Right Honourable Leah.
Merry Christmas!
Leah Maltley, I'm going to call you. Remember a girl, a woman at work, not a girl, and you got her wages because she had a similar name to you.
Yeah, Lynn Marlowe. Yeah,
so Lynn Marlowe. Yeah.
Sometimes you used to get each other's pay slips. But like really bad sort of breach of data protection, probably.
I would have thought so. Yeah, you probably wouldn't. You've got a national insurance number and stuff.
I've seen it all.
Seen it all, but unfortunately, not a very rich woman. So today is the League of Gentlemen Christmas special from the year 2000. Should we just get straight into it, Leroy?
Let's do it.
Let's just get into it and let's do it now.
Yeah, so a few recommendations for this one.
Swanee Blade asked us to do Inside Number 9. There's a particular episode on Inside Number 9 we want to do. I probably mentioned this in a previous episode. So we did this as like a, because two people's asked us for this, and then he asked us for Inside Number 9. So we thought, you know, this is like a sorry sort of podcast.
We're not quite giving Swanee Blade what he wants, but it's like Santa had ran out of the red race car you wanted. So he's blue.
Yeah. But we will be returning to Inside Number 9 because it is brilliant. Anyway.
You better believe it. Yeah, so this was slightly odd, this. I mean, let's just really basically touch on the background. We're not, with these Christmas ones, we are focusing on the special. We're not doing a big dig into the whole thing, but... sorry. With these Christmas ones, we're not doing a massive dig into the background. But this was part, technically it's part of series two of the sitcom series League of Gentlemen, which is a horror comedy set in the fictional town of Royston Vasey, which I think we mentioned before is named after, that's Chubby Brown's original name.
Real name, yeah, Royston Vasey.
But what I found odd is, like, they've called it part of series two, but actually series two was shown in January and February 2000, and this wasn't on until December 2000. So there's like a 10-month gap in the series.
This is a Christmas special, but it is quite, if you go on iPlayer and want to watch it, it's episode 7 of series 2. But unlike, it's nothing like series 2, because series 2 has got a laughter track, as has series 1. This hasn't, and they never use a laughter track in the following series after this, neither.
Yeah, and we're kind of in the summary, we'll touch on that. But yeah, I think that threw me a little bit. I think I wasn't sure if I'd seen it until you come to the last bit, but then I thought, I have seen this. It's You'll Never Leave is the title of this one. And as with all the others, we've got the main guys. We've got Mark Gatiss, Steve Pemberton, Reese Shearsmith, and the one everyone forgets, because I think he's in it occasionally, but very rarely, but Jeremy Dyson.
So
this basically is set. It's set on Christmas Eve, I think. I'm not sure. It's certainly around Christmas time. And the way that the story is told, we've got the Reverend Bernice, who's like a kind of, quite angry, scruffy looking. What's the difference between a vicar and a reverend?
One of them fronts a chart topping musical band, and the other one is the reverend. Now,
Who, like Church of England and Catholic or what? Anyway,
your dad's a Catholic, so you should know all about these sort of things.
Yeah, well, they would say the priest. So
they call him the Irish Road. Sorry, already we're in it. Go on.
So Bernice is in the church, and we get three stories. We get three unlinked stories. They are linked to people in the village that we've met before, but they don't have any ties to each other. The tie is Bernice in the church. Mm. So the first one we get, and arguably, I think it's the only one that actually has any humour in it.
Yeah, well, there's bits of humour throughout it, like little bits of humour, but this is the only one that I think is intended to be an out-and-out comedy, pretty much.
Yeah, okay, I suppose what I'm going to say, what I mean then is, so there's kind of some dark humour behind a lot of it, but this is the one that made me laugh. I don't think I laughed after this first story.
Mm.
And this is Charlie and Stella Hull, who are absolutely brilliant couple. Steve Pemberton and Mark Gatiss played a couple. And
no, it's Reese Shearsmith, isn't it, who plays the couple. Pemberton plays both.
Oh, of course, yeah, yeah. Gatiss is not in this one. This is not Mark Gatiss.
You credit him with both roles, he plays neither.
He's not in this, he's not in the whole bit, is he?
No, he's not in the whole, no.
Yeah, and they're basically a couple who absolutely despise each other. He's absolutely brilliant because he's often got his Rotherham United shirt on, which it's just funny in this environment anyway. I mean, do you remember these two from the series?
Yeah, yeah, these are fantastic. So Rotherham United actually offered Pemberton their new shirt for the new series. I presume it would have been Series 3, but they declined.
Contract. They offered it. No,
up front, yeah. No, but they declined because they said that, like, it looks better that he's just constantly got an old Rotherham United team.
And the right as well, yeah.
But this couple was, Steve and Reese went to an Italian restaurant in Highgate, and there were a couple next to him in silence. But when Luigi the waiter came in, they just they came to life and started talking. Hey, Luigi!
And there he is, look, it's Luigi. How you going on, Luigi? Yeah, brilliant.
So they're based on a real couple. So what this couple do, if you've not seen it, is they very rarely communicate to each other. They sort of they communicate via, tell her Luigi, tell her this, tell her that. You know, they just argue constantly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and they're throughout this episode, they're kind of arguing, but they're doing it through their daughter. I didn't write a name. Is it Julie? Tell him, Julie.
Tell her, Julie. Yeah. I think one of the first thing is, shut up, you bastard.
Yeah. Ask him what time he's home, Julie. Tell him whenever he's ready, Julie. Yeah,
tell him, Julie. Tell him he's rubbish in bed, Julie. Like, just shout it. Absolutely, yeah. Man. Then it turns out Julie's not actually in the house.
Yeah, Julie's at college that day anyway. So actually, the sort of star guest in this show as well, I really like Lisa Tarbuck as well. I think she's very underrated. But Lisa Tarbuck plays a Scouse character in this. Didn't make a note of a name. She's only in this one episode. And apparently there's some shots of her from behind that aren't her because she could only commit to one day of filming. Mm. So there are bits in there that isn't her. But she plays her Scouse mate of Stella. And Stella's talking about their relationship and how it's failed. And she puts them onto a group called The Solutions. And they say they'll sort everything out. So Stella goes off to see this group. It's like a kind of cult in a dark room.
Yeah.
Seems to be all the women from the village. They've all got face masks on. It's quite funny because she turns up with Postman Pat one on, which made me laugh. The rest have all got like the, what do you call the, like the kind of hacker's mask,
Anonymous.
The Vendetta thing, isn't it?
Yeah, anonymous masks.
Like Guy Fawkes, anonymous type look. So she's got Postman Pat on. They tell her to take that off. And basically they tell her that she needs three things. A lock of his hair, a picture of him, and something he uses every day. Mm. And that's what she's got to go and get to bring. So off she goes. I think they have another argument. He's trying to have a shave and she's having a go at him. And basically she gets some of his hair. It's horrible. Pulls it out of the plug hole, takes a pic of him off the wall, and she's got his razor that he's looking for. So, yeah, I mean, you hadn't seen this before, had you?
Did
you know these were going to be short stories, or did you think this would just be one long progression?
I thought this would be one long thing because obviously in the first two series on the League of Gentlemen, you get it's sort of, they're all sketches, but there is an overriding story throughout it, and they are connected. Whereas this is not connected other than Bernice in the church. I had no idea. I'd never seen this. I'm not sure why. I presume because obviously I didn't have the DVD or anything. I must have, because this, as you said, it makes more sense now. If the series ended in February, whatever you said, then I probably just missed it. And then Series 3 came on. I didn't even know it existed.
So the other thing that Charlie is concerned about, and this is what he's telling the vicar, is he's got a line dancing competition coming up. He's entered a line dance competition, and I think it's on Boxing Day, and he's worried about that, and he keeps having a dream where I can't remember how he's so his dream kind of is the plot, isn't it? So
his dream's the plot.
So basically his dream is, the summary is, he goes and does his line dancing, but this kind of ongoing cult thing that Stella's got going means they've kind of created a voodoo doll of him. So they're jiggling it about. They set his foot on fire. It ends up all on fire.
I think his dancing's really funny. So obviously he's doing his line dancing and he's jumping around and hopping around, screaming and stuff, isn't he?
Yeah, and actually there's a DVD extra of him from multiple angles doing the line dancing because people thought he was using a body double, but it was that sort of proud to show, no, that was me dancing, that you can have multiple angles. It's like player cams. Remember when they did that?
In his Rotherham shirt as well.
So he's dancing around. He loses. Stella does a slow clap and they come off stage. The trick is, so they don't tell you what the payment is, the solutions. They just tell you they'll sort it out. So they've ruined this competition for him. They've sabotaged him. That's what she wanted. But it turns out that the payment is, so Lisa Tarbuck is actually in on it. Mm. It turns out Stella's having an affair with Lisa Tarbuck's husband. She kills the husband with the razor that she's taken from her.
Lisa Tarbuck
kills
the husband. Yeah, Lisa. Plants it
in Stella's hand and then starts shouting, my husband's been murdered.
Yeah, and then she gets arrested, yeah.
And that's it, and they think Stella's done it. It's kind of really good crime because they've got a weapon that would be in their house. There's a reason. So, yeah, and that's his nightmare, and he tells Bernice. And she's kind of couldn't be any less interested because she's like,
I don't care.
Shut up. She says, we've all been lonely at Christmas. How do you think I feel? And just kicks him out of the church. And that's it. He goes off sobbing as well.
And I think, is this the scene where it shows you what happened to her mum?
Yeah, so it's the first time we see that the reason she's been alone at Christmas is, since she was 8, I think she said, is we see a Santa Claus kind of, you presume it's a mum, sort of grabbing a mum. We don't see too much about what's going on, but you think, that's a bit weird.
And she's screaming and says she's been alone since 9, I think, Benicia. Worked since 9 years old, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the first sort of first chapter, if you want, done. That's him on his way.
If we do it by chapters, like I enjoyed that. I think that is definitely the funniest. This were actually going to be the second chapter. They were going to use the second, but they ended up using it first.
I think probably rightly so as a link, because like you said, this is the moment they stopped using the comedy laughter track.
Mm.
So I suppose you at least want to start with one with a bit of humour, because I think if they'd started, particularly with the second one, that perhaps would have thrown people. And obviously that's what we're going to come to now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
The second one, we get a homeless guy stumbles into the church to see Bernice. His name's Matthew Parker, and he tells us about the character Herlip and how he came to suspect he was a vampire.
I never used to like this character Herlip, but I do now. Like I didn't. I thought before it was just too much of an innuendo to basically work as a. I thought they had miles better characters, but I thought he was really good in the film Herlip. And I do. Yeah, and this is like sort of different.
He's absolutely repulsive, isn't he? Like,
he is horrible, yeah.
Yeah, so we're off to Germany in a town called Duisburg in 1970. And there's a choir singing, and Herlip is the conductor. Steve Pemberton's created him. I think originally it was just using a piece of tape to lift up his top lip.
Yeah.
I don't know. He's kind of like, it makes your skin crawl, doesn't he? Like, he's got him really well as a character.
Yeah, really creepy character. Again, in the film, I mean, I'm not going to give any spoilers away if people aren't seeing it. And I just know I've not seen many films, but this is one of the few that I've seen at the cinema. And there's at the ending to this, like, character and stuff, like what he does at the end is horrible.
Yeah, and I was trying to place who it reminded me of. I wonder whether you could make this work in terms of the canon, like, would the ages work? So, do you remember in Hello, Hello, there's a guy called Gruber, like the Italian?
Yeah.
Oh, Rene. I wonder if that could be his origin story. But I'm not quite sure if it works for the dates. If it might do, actually, it's 1970. Yeah, it could be. This could be Gruber. I'm not sure.
Yeah, interesting.
But yeah, there's no fact behind that. That's pure Christmas speculation.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's kind of. They do. It's quite clever what they do. Like, it doesn't even really speak in innuendos, he just speaks in. Like open sexual references, but because it's sort of broken English, it's like, oh, maybe he's just saying the wrong words.
Yeah.
What does he say? He says something like, oh, some of the children can turn out to be quite the mouthful.
Yeah.
Rather than handful, but then you think like, oh, he's just got the word wrong, but now he probably hasn't because he's
kind of a little bit that not the 9 o'clock news sketch when they take the piss out of two Ronnies. When two Ronnies obviously make innuendos, then the obviously 9 o'clock news taking the piss out of him just to stick it up your arse. You know, that sort of stuff. Brilliant.
Yeah. So he's looking after his choir, and Matthew is a backpacker who's come to sing in. I don't know if he's a backpacker, but he's travelled across from England to sing with this choir.
Yeah,
it's the
this
one.
This is set, by the way, in 1975, isn't it? This story.
It says I've just wrote 1970s. Did I say 1970s? Yeah, 1970s. Yeah. The bit here, the slight carry on from the stage show. So when there's the stuff where he's got the young boy Justin, is it? Well, apparently when they did that on stage, that's Reese Shearsmith plays that character, but they decided for the TV show, Reese looks too old, so they actually got a young boy to kind of make it more uncomfortable, really. But
yeah,
this is the only bit that he almost looks a little bit too old. I think they're very good at looking like different people, but they can't get away from the fact that Reese Shearsmith is probably a, what would you say, would he be a 40-year-old man filming this?
It's got to be
supposed to be like 17.
Yeah, it's going to be 30. Yeah, I do know what you mean by that. Yeah, it looks at least like, I mean, at best late 20s, I think. Yeah.
And yeah, he's come across this day. We meet Herr Lipp's wife, or Frau. Is it Frau Herr? No, Frau Lipp, obviously.
Frau Lipp, yeah.
Lottie is the wife. And they stay with him. There's I picked up on it a little bit. I couldn't quite remember what it's from, but there's iconography there of where Herr Lipp takes Matthew up the stairs and we see the silhouette, and it's the Nosferatu is kind of one.
Yeah, Nosferatu is really famous, obviously. So again, I've not seen many films, but I've not even seen that, but everyone knows that scene. If you just type it in, that'll be the first thing you come up. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of that, it's quite weird looking, kind of long fingers come up and over. And
yeah, yeah. First time I ever saw that image was on the Under Pressure video by Queen, weirdly enough. I think it's Under Pressure. I had Queen's Greatest Flicks too. One of the videos, like, is a montage of different things, and that's on it. I think it's that.
I wonder if they took inspiration from that and not Nosferatu, because they like.
I've never seen any.
Well, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, they've just got it all from what's this one where he's, I want to break free heat. That's the inspiration for all these.
That's
characters.
The inspiration for League of Gentlemen is Queen's Greatest Flicks too.
Which, again, we can't confirm as facts, but we'll put it out there.
By the way, just before, I'm jumping about. Barbara obviously gives the young lad a lift, don't she?
So it's Babs Cabs. I didn't quite get that. Is that Babs Cabs' granddad or?
No, she's just a taxi driver, Barbara.
Yeah, but is that back in the early days, or is that?
Oh yeah, of course. Sorry, yeah, because we're talking. So of course, not sure really. But you know, they got the idea for Barbara. Obviously, you'd never get away with, doing something like this now. But she's based on an actual magician that they saw, who was preoperative transsexual, and all the tricks she was sidetracked because she was just continually talking about a surgery. Well, you know, I've had this done as well. She never ended up getting the tricks done and stuff because she was just going on about that.
Yeah, because actually, they're driving like a horse and cart or something. So
it might be that. Yeah. They obviously just tried to get as many characters in as they can to this. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know whether that was supposed to be some relation or Babs Cabs or, I don't know. I didn't overthink that bit. They take him up to his bedroom. Really creepy. It's done like a kind of old, it's like a young kid's room, but not, it's really over cluttered. It's like one of these rooms where a child died young, so they just never updated it. It's just like lost in time, this sort of kid's room.
This is really good. This is the sort of horror I love. This, like, because this is a horror. Let's be honest, more than a comedy.
It is, yeah. It's creepy. It's sinister. And I think the room itself is quite sinister. They put him in a bed. It's like a bed that's far too small for him in the middle of the room. That I found quite funny.
Yeah.
And we see, because up until now, I suppose if you've seen the series, you do. But if you're taking this in isolation, you don't know Herr Lipp. Is he just a nice guy, slightly camp, who you're kind of reading too much into?
Yeah.
And this is the first time we see that, no, that's not the case, because he leaves Matthew in the room and then he's straight to like a kind of peephole outside. And he watches him get changed. And we see Matthew stripped down to his pants, and then we don't see any more. The description that I read said then that Herr Lipp walks away hiding his erection, but I didn't notice that.
I didn't notice that, to be completely honest, no. But
if you picked up on that, well done for watching Hair Lips Groin. It's the middle of the night. Matthew gets up to open a window. Sorry, the window's blown open. He gets up. He turns around and he has a vision of Hair Lip on the ceiling. That's another kind of iconic thing, but I'm not sure which one that is.
It's
a little bit Exorcist, but I don't think that's what it is. I think it's a vampire film.
Yeah, anyway, carry on, because I'll be here all day. Go on.
Yeah, so, and a really horrible bit there when he opens the wardrobe, and it's him, but like a dead body, but the eyes and mouth have been stitched up and it falls out of the wardrobe.
Yeah.
I thought that was really dark, like really kind of genuinely creepy.
I like to say this is shot fantastically, I think. I mean, especially for a TV show, it is shot like, imagine if you saw this at the cinema, it'd be even more, creepy and scary, but it is shot so well. I'm not saying you don't get these sort of things anymore, but I don't know if there's that much budget goes into comedy now, to be honest. I'm not sure. I've never seen anything like this anywhere on TV.
I think you could tell as well. I mean, all of them, but I think particularly Gates is really into his kind of horror and iconography type sort of.
Yeah,
I don't know. It feels very sort of Gates heavy, a lot of this. And it's brilliant. I think they've really kind of indulged themselves in that horror side of it, haven't they? It is dark and it is creepy. And it,
this
despite
must be
the fact that
shock.
These guys all look sort of quite funny in their roles, it is genuinely like, God, if you'd never seen the series, well, I was going to ask you that at the end, but it seems the right time to ask you. If you'd never seen the series and you watch this in isolation, would you even know it's a comedy, or would you just think, God, that's a really sort of dark, I don't really know what it is, just short stories, a horror thing that I've just watched?
That's a really interesting one. I think the first one, you'd definitely think it were a comedy. This one, and the last one, the next one we're going to speak about, I mean, it is a bit tongue-in-cheek. Like, there's, I think,
well,
if
the
it
last one
out...
starts off as if it's sort of, because the character is funny in the series, but I find that one probably the most tragic of all of them, but we'll kind of finish on this.
Yeah,
one,
wrap this one up first. We'll go on to it. Yeah.
So it was all a dream, obviously. Matthew wakes up, and the next morning he's singing in the choir. He's doing his bit of solo singing, and he's got two puncture wounds on his neck, and all the rest of the choir are looking at it laughing. I couldn't quite get that bit because Hair Lip looks really annoyed. But then when I looked at the description, somebody said, the choir are laughing because they can see he's being bit, but Hair Lip thinks they're laughing for other reasons. I don't know what that's implying. Are they thinking that? Does he think they think he's done something with him overnight?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I didn't pick that up myself, to be completely honest. Maybe. Yeah.
Don't know. So he sees these bite marks in the mirror. He's obviously had this dream. He's starting to convince himself that Hair Lip is a vampire. It's confirmed when he walks past an open door, and Hair Lip is disgustingly downing a pint of red liquid, which obviously is the implication is that's blood. He goes in to see Frau Lip, who is Hair Lip's wife, and says to her he thinks he's a vampire, and she pretends she doesn't speak English. There's a bit where he does his what does he say? He says fangs, and she says you're welcome, and he says you do speak English.
Yeah, and that's right.
She don't want anything to do with it. Had you guessed the twist by now? I think I was starting to.
I think at this point, because I think it's putting you one way. And with it, to be honest, if it wasn't something as good as these writers, maybe I wouldn't. But I did think, more to the meets the eye here. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think straight away, they sort of make it too obvious what's going to happen to the point where it's not going to happen. The complete contrast to Les Dennis that we did a couple of weeks ago, actually, where like a lot of his punchlines are so obvious and they end up being so obvious. This looks like it's going to something obvious, and then it's a bit like Inside Number 9 is fantastic for it, because there's not many Inside Number 9s I've figured out, and although you're being led down the wrong way, you can't quite work out what's actually happening, and this is pretty similar.
I wonder if there's a market for Go Back more like Les Dennis stuff, where people are expecting a twist and it is just one thing. Like,
well, people feel good, don't they, when they guess twists, so maybe that's a good little genre. We should just do the most obvious stories like a full time. We'll go, I saw that one coming.
So we comes to the choir, the church again the next day, and Matthew's come to expose Hair Lip. He throws some holy water on his face, which Hair Lip just sort of brushes aside and asks him what he's doing. He says something like, you have come the liquid all over my face, or some other kind of, again, not innuendo, just some kind of. And he's brought a mirror, so he holds up the mirror expecting there'll be no reflection. But actually, the reveal is he can see himself, but when he looks over his shoulder, he can't see any of the choir. The choir are vampires. Frau Lip or Lottie appears from above. She's the kind of head vampire.
Yeah.
And yeah, he, Herr Lip, I suppose, does the honourable thing here. He sort of says, run, Matthew, run. And he sort of holds them off a little bit, and they bite him and turn him into a vampire.
Felt sorry for him, and I felt sorry for him in the film as well, to be honest. He's a really, really tragic character, Herr Lip.
Well, I missed a bit as well, actually, where he goes up to his room the night before that to kind of try it on, and he's brought him some aftershave.
Mm.
And again, another not innuendo. Do you have any German in you? No. Would you like some?
Yeah,
and he's been eating garlic. So he said, oh, no, I think one of us has trumped. Which, to be fair, that did make me laugh, actually. Just seemed the wrong word, but, yeah, quite funny. And, yeah, that's it. That's the end. So it comes back then to Matthew, who presumably, because he runs away at that point, but presumably he, because the story is how he came to suspect Herr Lip was a vampire. But actually, there's an argument he was part of the reason why he is a vampire. It wasn't when he met Matthew.
No, that's true. Yeah.
But he is now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the second story done.
Again, good. It was like, again, the three short stories. That one, let me think. Probably, I actually thought the third, I don't know, what's the weakest one, actually? This, I think the first one was my favourite, and two and three, I don't know, interchangeable for me.
I must admit, by the way, at the end of that one, I was kind of quite lost in the story, and it threw me a bit when we went back to the church, and I thought, oh yeah, I forgot this is like I kind of wanted that story to carry on, really.
Yeah.
And no, you're done with that now. Now we're back at the church.
So we're back at the church. Bernie's like, obviously, and Dr. Matthew Chinnery, which is a brilliant name, by the way.
We get another flashback again, which reveals a little bit more of this Santa that's kind of grabbing her mom. I didn't pick up on it that moment in time exactly what was going on, if I'm honest. So it was good when we come to it later. I don't know if you'd already...
No, I knew that. I'm not going to give it away, but I knew the particular character were in it. So I did have suspicions, but I don't think I would have otherwise.
Yeah, and like you say, Mr. Chinnery comes in, he says...
This is the vet in the series, who's brilliant, because I love his catchphrase, because if you don't remember him, he just kills animals by accident.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a lot of the characters in this are sinister. This guy's just unbelievably unlucky. So they're like, but the first one is, it's like the guy's putting his dog down, he's, I'm so sad to leave him, and he's like stroking his dog, here you go, and he puts him to sleep, then he comes in with the real dog.
he's put the wrong dog down.
Yeah, he's put the wrong dog, and his catchphrase is, I have rather some upsetting news.
Yeah, and he's this tragic figure, yeah. Exactly like you said, there's a lot of nasty characters in League of Gentlemen. This guy, he's doing his best. He's trying to save these animals, but it always goes wrong. And this is the tale of why, basically. So this is how he was cursed. And again, it goes to a flashback. So he starts telling Bernice about the reason why he thinks he's cursed. So we go back to his great-grandfather. It doesn't give you time. It's like sort of Victorian times. And
I think you say, what I've read is 1895.
80s. So it does specifically give you time. So apologies, I didn't write that down. And his great-grandfather was the foremost vet in his field. So we see him in one of these kind of theatres that they're sometimes used for like the Christmas lectures and stuff now. They're quite steep. Everybody's looking down on him. He's doing an operation in the middle. He's stitching up some sort of rabbit. And everybody's kind of holding the breath. And he does it. He lifts it up. He's fixed it. He's cured the rabbit. Everybody's delighted. And, yeah, he's clearly good at what he does. So there's a really odd-looking character that we turn out is another vet called Dr. Majolica. And I don't know if that's some sort of reference to something. It sounds like it should be Majolica.
Not sure.
So he beckons to him. And he basically says to him, look, you're great at what you do. We want you to become a partner. We're going to send you off to the north of England. And they send him to Royston Vasey. So when we get there, there's old versions of some of the more modern characters, implying that these characters kind of repeat in this modern village. It doesn't really focus on that, but I think Is that where we get Babs Cabs as a kind of horse and cart driver?
Oh, it might be that. Sorry. I think I've jumped in, Anna, there. I think this is where, yeah, this is maybe where Babs, yeah, takes Matthew Chinnery, yeah.
He goes in and really weird this. He meets this kind of first, I can't remember the name of this mad guy we stuck up there. I didn't write it down. I've got Mr. Purblind, but I think he's the other one. I think he's the
elderly guy is Mr. Purblind.
Yeah, so there's this mad character who comes in on his bike. And this is the bit that made me think, oh, I have seen this before. He comes riding around the room on a little bike with his mad air. To be fair, that did make me laugh, actually, even though this bit is not necessarily a comedy. I did laugh at that. Mm. And he basically tells him, look, there's another partner, but you must leave him alone. He's a sick man. The bit I found really odd is as he's talking, things are moving around on the desk. Mm.
Yeah,
playing some sort of supernatural.
Yeah.
You don't go into that at all.
No.
He wakes up at night and there's a really weird noise. Dr. Chinnery wakes up at night, hears a really weird noise, and even though he's been told to stay away from this Dr. Purblind, he can't resist. He goes in to check what's going on, and basically we get the story. It's done through what do you call it, like not finger puppets, like paper versions of silhouettes. Quite a funny bit of a monkey having sex with an elephant in there that's done really sort of over the top. But yeah, we find out that basically this monkey had sex with everything whenever it wanted. It was called Top Off, and it was the Maharaja, or the kind of emperor equivalent. It was his favorite thing, and he loved this monkey. And one day it was, I think this is when it was having sex with the elephant, and it got stuck having sex with the elephant.
Yeah.
So he went to get some Vaseline to remove it. But he actually used verruca acid. Verruca acid, as if that's the worst thing that he could have used. It caused this monkey to lose his tackle, I suppose, effectively. And the guy in Aladdin, Jasmine's dad, what is he? The
genie.
No, the it's not. I don't think it's emperor, is it? Because it's India. It's not.
You might be surprised to see. No, I've never seen Aladdin.
Doesn't surprise me. Anyway, whatever he is, this guy, Rahamaja, but that doesn't sound right. Whatever it is, anyway, he curses him, and he basically says any animals he touch will be cursed to death. And he's got this monkey, this Top Off monkey. He's got his testicles around his neck on like a little chain, and he says to him, touch them, touch these balls or something like that.
Yeah, I laughed at that, the way he says that. Yeah,
and even though like he doesn't want to, he kind of feels compelled. So Dr. Chinnery reaches out. As he does, the guy sort of cheers, punches the air. The other little mad vet comes in, he's happy. Dr. Majolik is also there. It was all a big thing they were all in on, and they basically wanted to lift the curse off this guy. And to do that, they needed to get somebody else to touch the monkey balls, which he's now done.
Poor old Mr. Chinnery, yeah, and that's
Dr.
why
Chinnery's he's great great granddad. Oh, sorry, him and any of his heirs will be cursed to kill any animals they touch. At that time, though, why don't you just get a different job then?
No, I've had to say that. Well, he does in series 3 or 4. I don't know if it's the anniversary, I can't remember, but he does get a different job and he still ends up killing animals. He works behind a pub and he still ends up, I think, like loads of donkeys die, something like that. I remember it anyway.
Well, there's one in this where there's I think it's the same rabbit actually that he's fixed earlier. It's got some sort of, I don't know what it exactly was, some sort of pressure on its brain or something. So his fix is he's going to tap it on the head with this like little pin hammer thing. Mm-hmm. And he ends up popping its eyeballs out that hit this other animal that basically kills like a full circus of animals outside, doesn't it? There's like lions and elephants and all sorts of horses, all zebra. There's a dead zebra on the floor. Like.
yeah, he's mad that bit, yeah.
So yeah, just from trying to help this one animal. And yeah, it does make it really sort of tragic because he's, Even he wasn't a bad person, but certainly not like generations down the line that are still being.
No.
I did kind of genuinely feel like, oh, I feel really sorry for him.
Yeah, and I always felt sorry for him in the actual show as well. Obviously, this is his granddad, it's the same character. He's got that permanent smile, hasn't he? That, like, sort of.
Yeah.
I don't know, nice. And apparently, it was based on a vet of All Creatures Great and Small, which I've never seen, but, you know, that sort of nice village.
Yeah, I have actually, and I bet it was the one played by Peter Davidson, I would guess.
You think?
It made me feel like really bad. Do you know what it reminded me of in a big tangent here? Did you ever People used to call this a ghost story, but it's not a ghost story. I don't know why it ever was. Did you ever hear that story where there's a guy, a hunter, lives out in the woods, and I think his wife's died, but he's got a baby. So he has to go out at night, but he tells his dog, his faithful dog, I need you to stay and look after the baby. I've got to go out. So when he comes back, he sees blood all over the baby's bed sheets. The dog's got blood in its mouth. So he picks up his gun and shoots the dog dead.
Mm.
But then he sees the sheets scrambling about a bit, and the baby crawls out of them with a dead snake that's covered in blood that the dog's just killed.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It sort of reminded me of that. I don't know why. But used to say that's a ghost story. That's not a ghost story.
No. I'll hit you one back. Remember that one where girl living on her own, like woman, young woman, and she used to put her hand under the bed to make sure her dog was there, and dog kept licking it. She goes, yeah, that's all right. So then she goes to the toilet, and a dog's been splattered against wall, killed. And in blood, it says, humans can lick as well as dogs.
That's the punchline.
And that's the punchline. So Les Dennis laughter show. He's back.
And what is that the end of the story then?
That's the end of the story, yeah. So obviously, it's being a man. I mean, I think you'd be able to tell the difference, to be completely honest, but that's not. You know, that's going to ruin the story.
Try that for yourself, aren't you?
Write yourself. Anyway, carry on. We're running into the last bit now, aren't we?
Yeah, so that's it, basically. It comes back to the church, and she says... And
she's put the Christmas cheer, isn't she, but now, Bernice? Because she's, like, helped three people. At first, she's like, oh, shut up, I don't care. And then at the end, she's, like, in really good spirits.
Yeah, and she gives him a bit of a pep talk and says, no, you're not cursed, you can do it, I believe in you. And yes, she feels good. She's like, I've actually helped people. Although the Rotherham guy, she just kicked out crying. So didn't help him that much. But
yeah,
I think you're right. I think she thinks, you know what? Yeah, it's time to be festive.
This is in a normal show, it's going to end on a happy note, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, despite that darkness, like, oh, well, at least they've kind of given it a Christmas ending. Yeah, so there's a knock on the door. And for those who don't know, there's a mad character in the series called Papa Lazaru.
Fantastic character. First time I ever saw it, it's funny and shit scary at the same time.
He is genuinely scary. Yeah, you're right. And he's basically just, his catchphrase is, hello, Dave. He calls
hello, Dave. It's Dave. Do you know what this is named after? Have you seen the backstory to this? I'll laugh mad off at this. So the inspiration...
David Beddingfield.
No, the inspiration is, Pemberton and Shearsmith shared a flat, and the landlord was called Peter Papalazzari. That's a real name. And he would only insist on speaking to Pemberton. He'd never talk to Shearsmith. So he'd say, is Steve there? And he'd go around. Shearsmith would say, no, but I can speak to you. I want to speak to Steve. And that's how it came. They changed Steve to Dave, obviously. Because every single time he'd just like say, oh, no, he's not in. Is Steve there?
He's this weird, there's controversy around the character because the blackface that they use for the character.
What controversy behind that? I mean, I understand that completely, but he's certainly not playing up to anything other than I think he's just trying to be, because he's a black and white minstrel, basically, that he's playing.
It's just a mad, scary character. And
he's wearing a bandana under his top hat, which I found very funny as well.
Yeah, it basically just kidnaps people. And he's sort of, his other catchphrase is, you're my wife now. And he just
there's a brilliant bit in the first... Do you know we're only ever in four episodes? He's probably one of the most famous characters. We're only in four episodes. He's in the film as well, actually.
The tie-in is, so he's come here to kidnap Bernice and does his, you're my wife now. But actually, we see in the flashback, it was Papa Lazaru who was actually kidnapping her mom as well when she was eight.
Yeah. So, and that's how it ends. And that's how it ends. Papa Lazaru, by the way, never ages, obviously, because... Although this is not, this is what's weird about Paplazzo as a character. He's obviously like a demon of some sort.
He's
the only one in the whole thing who looks exactly the same in the scene from, you know, where Bernice's mum and Bernice.
Yeah. And he clearly knows, it remembers her because he said something like, it's been a long time.
Yeah, been a long time. You know, if you look at the behind the scenes, when they do, I think it's the first episode Paplazzo was in, and it's really creepy watching, like, Shearsmith sort of, you know, get into the role and stuff. And obviously he's got this bizarre makeup on. It's really, I think this character is one of the most, it's just a bizarre, brilliant character, Papa Lazaru. Like, I remember when I first saw it laughing and being like, God, this is just weird.
It is really dark. And Yeah, that's it. We've done with Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Yeah, I really, really, really enjoyed this. I've never seen it. I thought it's not a comedy. Well, it is a comedy in places, but if you're going for like laugh after laugh, then you know, stick to Malcolm and Wise or Les Dennis. But if you're after something that'll, it's not like not very Christmassy, to be completely honest. But if you're after something that's going to make you think, fucking hell, I've not seen anything like that before on TV, then I think this is absolutely worth a watch for anybody.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. Yeah, not the sort of light-hearted laugh along I was expecting, to be honest. I was messaging you in it saying this is not a comedy. What are we watching here? Mm. But yeah, it's really good. It's a good watch. It came out 2 years later on DVD, so presumably there was some request for it. A lot of fans must have wanted it because it didn't come out at that same time. It was released a little bit later. But it's on BBC iPlayer, and yeah, I would recommend it if you've got a window of about an hour.
Yeah, so it's an hour long. Yeah, real like I say, definitely recommend it. If you want to get in the festive cheer, don't bother. But if you want something good to watch at Christmas instead of Mrs. Brown's Boys, then put this on.
Well, we said that, don't we? We've never seen it. So we jumped on a Mrs. Brown's Boys bandwagon, but I've never seen it.
Yeah, I do a lot of things. You know, it's like when you slag, I don't know, I slag X Factor off. I'm not sure I've ever seen an episode of X Factor, but obviously it's the cool thing to do. You've got to be with the cool kids, aren't you?
Yeah, and that's if you're wanting a Christmas message from us, that's probably what it is. Stick with the cool kids.
Well, that's episode 8. Really enjoyed that. I've never seen it. It's always good to watch stuff that we've not seen before. Next one, we're cheating a little bit, aren't we? In a way.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it's Christmas. I think we can make it work.
We can make it. So what we're gonna do is our favourite Christmas films. This is not something I've requested because I think I might struggle. To get five Christmas films.
I just think, as a general rule, we kind of said we're not going to do film because there's a grey area. If they've been shown on TV,
yeah,
particularly if they've been shown on enough times, like
everyone would pick or been on TV, I would have thought, because
yeah, then it doesn't become festive TV. So they're not sort of things that are out of cinema that haven't been on. They've all, anything we pick has to be on TV multiple times. And yeah, I don't think we're breaking any rules. I think nostalgic TV, gathering around TV at Christmas to watch whatever films are on, is very much part of that. So, yeah, we're going to pick five each of our favourite Christmas films and take you through those.
Yeah, I mean, you think I'm mad for being concerned about this because obviously this is your idea and I'm like, oh, you're like, surely, but yeah, I'm not really thought about it yet, but we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes. And look forward to it in a way.
Have you actually seen five films that we can do?
I've not started researching yet, but I'm sure they will have.
I hope so.
We're gonna do, tell you what, you're gonna have to pick 10 because there's a good chance I'll pick some of the favorites. So if I pick ones, obvious ones, you'll need backups if you've already got them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I would like to do Home Alone, but I'm guessing that's one of
I'm doing Home Alone.
Yeah, so you'll have to do that then. All right, you have Home Alone and I'll pick 8 others.
Yeah, that's absolutely fine, yeah. All right then, bud, and I will see you next time.
Certainly will.
Bye. Living
with Maiderly. If anyone wants to get in touch with us, send us anything, find us on Twitter at livingwithmaid1, or you can send us an email at livingwithmaidly@outlook.com. Living